Well, good afternoon, everybody, and I have to say that I've just vacated the producer's desk this afternoon just to sit behind the microphone where Alan's usually sitting. And I firstly want to say it's a great pleasure to have the opportunity to interview Alan and get to know a little more about the raspy voice behind the microphone. And to start with, I'd really just like to start from the beginning. I know you were born in Perth in the 1930s-ish, but your family moved to the country when you were very young, to the small town of Curup, which is essentially a fruit-growing area. And I know it had to be a small, because I looked it up, and currently it has a population of 160 people, so I can only imagine its size in the 1940s. Can you tell us a little bit about your memories of your mum and dad and of that town?
Yeah, well, my dad was the headmaster of country schools, and we shifted around because Dad got promoted every couple of years, so we moved to another town. So I spent my childhood in the corner of schoolyards in various country towns, Curup being one of them, but quite a lot. And I remember as a kid I used to be able to go over to the school and sit with the class with the book and everybody else, you know. Mum couldn't keep me at home, so that was the way I did it. But I then when I got to about 16, yeah, well, before, no, when I was 13, I went off to high school in Bunbury. Dad was at Curup, so I boarded in Bunbury and went home on weekends. And so there, that was that part of my life, yeah.
Alan, what do you remember about your access to radio and music at that time?
In those days, that's just while the war was on and just after the Second World War, radio was the king, of course. Radio was the only thing. And in country towns, you know, the ABC had a big transmitter that went all over the area, and there was local commercial broadcast stations in the town that was fairly close by. So we had a big radio in the corner of the room, in our lounge room. It took the main place. And in the evening, Jeanette, you sat there and listened to serials and music, and that was the thing, and I just listened to music and radio all my life, you know.
So were there any presenters in particular that you remember from that period of time? Was there anybody that stood out?
Oh, they were.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not particularly, no.
Okay.
A bit later on when I got a bit older and I sort of listened to jazz, I used to listen to the jazz programs from the ABC, and there were couple of very famous blokes. Arch McCurdy was one from Sydney who was really good. John West was another one. They were pretty good.
And did they stay on ABC radio for a long time? Did they stay on radio for a long time?
Arch McCurdy did 40 years, yeah, of jazz programming, and I remember him for years, and I sort of picked up how jazz is broadcast, and you know how the really good men do it.
So it was the beginning of learning about radio and presenting and interviewing in a way.
Oh, I suppose so. And then it was a bit later in my life when I started to do radio, you know, in, from this side of the desk. Yeah, that's right.
Can I just ask, when you went to Bunbury, you boarded. So how was that for you when you were a teenager boarding?
Didn't hear any radio then. It was
so you were boarding in Bunbury through your high school years,
yeah,
and then you were going back to your Curup on the weekends.
That had been shifted somewhere else, and I went to Mount Barker to work actually, and I went to do my leaving and didn't do too well, so my dad got me a job with Elders, the local stock firm in Mount Barker, and I lived in Mount Barker for about 4 years. Well, I lived in Kendon up actually, but my dad was the headmaster, and then I went to Mount Barker to work. Probably listened to the radio in my car on the way there, and after I had some money, I could afford to buy a little radio to put in my car. So then I ended up with Elders in Bridgetown when I was about 22 or something like that, and then after that, I came up to Perth and lived at home for a little while there.
Now, I asked you before the interview to select a song. Which was the first song that you remember as being significant in your teens? And you actually said it was... I'll let you say who it was.
It was...
Johnny Ray.
Johnny Ray. Johnny Ray sang Cry, and it was all different. It was the first time that this sort of music had come into anywhere, really, the way he did it. And the parents and grown-ups thought that music had gone to the devil when Johnny Ray sang Cry with his hand over his ear and shouting into the microphone. You're going to play it, eh?
I am. I'm just about... Well. So shall we have a listen to Johnny Ray with Cry?
If your sweetheart sends a letter of goodbye, it's no secret you feel better if you cry. When waking from a bad dream, don't you sometimes think it's real? But it's only false emotions that you feel. If your heartaches seem to aim around to be young, and your blues keep getting bluer with each song, remember, sunshine can be found behind a cloudy sky. So let your head down and go on and cry.
There he was, Johnny Ray, and I was just saying to Alan that I looked him up, and the commentary on him was that he bridged the gap between crooners and rock and roll in the 50s and was known as the Prince of Wales and the Cry Guy.
I remember later on, when I lived in Bridgetown, I suppose I was about 22, the people next door in the house we had was sort of subdivided, and the guy played Hound Dog over and over and over by Elvis Presley. Just played it about 30 times every day. Because all we had was, he had a little 45, you know, and a little recorder those days, a little record player, and he just played Hound Dog over and over, so there it was.
Wore the needle out. Well, during the early 50s, it was a rebellious culture of jiving and twisting, and rock and roll, and it started to become really popular. And I wondered whether you were a dancer, a diver?
No, not much.
But you did say to me...
Yeah, I could do dancing if I didn't have to hang on to anyone while I was doing... if I didn't coordinate too well, so...
It was...
Tony Checker was all right, yeah.
Okay, well, I'll just play a bit of Chubby Checker.
Come on, baby.
Well, there was a little bit of Chubby Checker, which you were twisting to and not holding on to your partner. Well, in 1959, you moved to Christmas Island, and you were in your early 20s, and you stayed there until 1968. Apart from working as a clerk, you became involved with establishing a radio station on Christmas Island. How did that come about, and what was it like living there?
The government up there at the time, or the Australian government, wanted to put a station in Christmas Island to counteract the because it was so close to Indonesia, to counteract the Sukarno was
a bit
of an influence. But by the time they built the radio station, the Indonesians had got rid of Sukarno anyhow, so they didn't really need it. But I'd been there for about 7 years on and off, and the radio there was shortwave radio, mainly from ABC or Radio America, if you were really had to listen to something. But I had a probably record collection of 60 or 70 LPs, you know,
Was that the radio library?
A big library of... And I made tapes as to, like, a couple of hour tapes, and if we went to a party, I'd take them along and put them on, and we'd dance to things like that. And then when I started the radio station, I sort of employed just locals to come in and do sessions on the radio like you're doing here, Sue. But of that, there was English sessions, but there was also Malay sessions and Chinese sessions as well. And I did that for a couple of years, ran the radio station there before I came back to Australia in 68, yeah.
So while you were there, the station was incorporating the locals by having Chinese and Malays contributing in programs on the station.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And did that station stay open for very long, Alan?
Did it what?
Did it stay running for a long time?
A little while. When it went for a little while after that, the way I ran it, then later on, when television came in Australia, it sort of cut out radio a fair bit. So, they put a repeater station for the television, a satellite like they can nowadays. And so on Christmas Island, you can get television now and radio from satellites, so they don't really need a station. And if they've got if any of the locals want to do a program, they can go up and do like they do here, take over the station and do an hour and play some music or something like that. But I went back in 2005, I think it was, and up to the island and had a look around up there. Yeah.
Lots of changes? Were there lots of changes?
Oh, yeah, it wasn't anywhere near the same, yeah. They'd stopped there. It was mainly phosphate that they were exporting down to Australia for the farms, and they'd run out of phosphate. It would just... playing around, yeah.
So it had done its time in a way.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, Alan. Well, I also, moving on, I asked you to choose a female artist who you liked at that time. And it's somebody I don't actually know at all called Jane Morgan. And you chose this song. So I'll just put that on, and it's What a Difference a Day
Made. Oh, good. I like to hear her. Yeah,
did you know... can you tell us a little bit about Jane Morgan? Because I don't actually...
Oh, yeah, that old... I've got that record there, probably 50 years old. Yes, has it been around for a while?
Well, let's have a listen to Jane Morgan.
What a difference a day made. 24 little hours brought the sun and the flowers where there used to be rain. My yesterday was blue. Difference a day makes. There's a rainbow before me. Skies above can't be stormy. Since the moment of bliss, that thrilling kiss, it's heaven when you find romance on your menu. What a difference a day.
Of Alan Watson, who I'm currently just speaking to about his adventures in life. And we just were talking about Christmas Island, but after you came back from Christmas Island, you married Fran and somewhat settled down. You decided to go back to study and you embarked on another career and became an accountant. How was that, and was music still a part of your life?
Not really, no. I suppose, but you know, in the evenings and that, I would have listened to music, yeah. But it wasn't a big thing there, you know.
So you had a career as an accountant,
yeah.
and retired, and Alan, you then found Capital Radio through a friend and began volunteering. You have been at Capital Radio for nearly two decades. You are not only doing the Saturday Swing program, but you're also doing the 8 to 8 program on Wednesdays, and you're not slowing down. What do you think is great about Capital Radio for you and the community?
I suppose, yeah, well, I know on my Wednesday night program, I think that I'm a friend to a lot of people who are at home and lonely and by themselves, and they need someone to listen to and somebody to relate to, you know. And I think we serve something to the community that they don't get from other radio stations. And because there's a lot of us, there's 30 presenters, you get a variety of music and And
well, you've got both programs. You've got the swing program, and Wednesday, of course, is much more diverse in terms of genres of music. Yeah. So it's great that you're doing both.
Yeah, I enjoy doing the swing program. It's easy to put together, and
you know it well.
Yeah, that's right. I've only got about 1,000 CDs, so I suppose I'm going to pick once to leave out. It's a difficult bit. So yeah, good on you.
All right. Before leaving the interview, Alan, I want to say it's been a pleasure speaking with you, but it's also been great being your producer on a Saturday afternoon. I thank you for your program, and I want to also give a shout-out to Fran, who I'm sure gives a hand every now and then to ensure that you get to your gigs. And we had one final song. For you to choose, which was probably a song I said to you that has endured the test of time for you, and that's Ray Charles. And so I'm just going to play that selection, Georgia on My Mind.